And then for those who are new, we have a site, experiencethebigbook.org. I gave you the cards. We have podcasts from the last year on there, and they're tagged, and we've covered the whole book and a lot of steps we took and carry this message. I've also written 55 Thoughts on Recovery. I wrote one today on we're trying to put our lives in order from page 77. So I hope somebody will read it. And then don't tell me if you don't like it. And then, but there's a lot of information on the site, experiencethebigbook.org. We've got resources of recovery, and see if you can find it useful. Tonight we're on to wives. My buddy Mark's here, and he was the one that suggested that we talk about covering this, because we're in our 10th year, and for the first 9 years I'd cover the book and then skip the to wives, family afterwards, and to employer, because Joe and Charlie always skipped it. They said it was it wasn't the instructions on recovery, and I think they did it because they only had enough time in their weekends to cover the first 102 pages. And they're called the Lost Chapters, and then we did it last July, and it was good. And I actually listened to the one on July that I did on this, and I said, wow, that was really pretty good. And so see if we get anything out of it tonight. But these are the lost chapters, and there's a lot of spiritual principles in these chapters. And of course, I don't think the big book is read as much as probably the founders thought it would be in this day and age, but these chapters are skipped by a lot of people, but there's a lot of spiritual principles in there. And I think I have the handout, I'll give it, where I copied all the spiritual principles that are in here. And we got to page 108, and the first few pages, people commented, it was hard to listen to because it's about us and how we were, and it's not pretty. And it really should be written to the alcoholic. And people criticized Bill W. because he helped write this, but I think he had a lot of people help him write it. They said Lois should have written it, but his language, his style was in the book, and so the style in this chapter is very consistent with the way the rest of the book is written. And you have to remember that they worked with a lot of wives, because the wives used to come before the husbands would come in the beginning, and the wives would go to the meetings. And sometimes the husbands would never stay, but the wives stayed. And so it was a family disease, and this is 1935, 36, 37, depression. People lived in small areas. There was no TV. People didn't have cars. A lot of people didn't have jobs. We were poor. It was a whole different time. And so the people in the group were very close-knit. And so we're going to see some of the spiritual principles in these pages. And in these pages too, you're going to see how they approach the alcoholic, and we're going to start with the description of how the struggle. When you're struggling with an alcoholic, they put them in four different categories. This is not the classification of alcoholics you have in Doctor's Opinion. It's a little bit different. And then the way I feel about the whole big book is that it was God inspired, and He chose a few people to help put this message together. And so I think everything in here has value. And so we're starting with, try not to condemn your husband, alcoholic husband, no matter what he says or does. So that's one of the spiritual principles. It doesn't say you can't condemn him. It's like they say, try never to label anybody an alcoholic, but try not to condemn anyone. Especially the word condemn isn't very good. You know, it's a very powerful word. And here's something that we talk about a lot when we deal with resentments. It says he is just another sick, unreasonable person. Treat him when you can as though he has had pneumonia. When he angers you, remember that he's very ill. Now, the two pages in the big book that changed my life are the four paragraphs at the bottom of page 66 and the top of 67, which it says, how do we get free of anger? Well, when we get free of anger, the person that we're angry at, we have to look on them as possibly they're sick. Spiritually sick. And what they're saying that is everybody has their personality. Now when they're looking at us, we are very sick. And we're very spiritually ill. And so it says, they ask God to give me love, patience, and tolerance for him or her as I would for any sick person. And that's how we should deal with each other, how we should deal with everybody. And then it says, How can I be helpful to this person? And then God, save me from being angry at them. And then it says, God, give me a kind and tolerant view. And so when dealing with an alcoholic or anyone, those are the four prayers I say, and it changes the way you see people. And of course, we understand that this person was powerless. They couldn't have been any differently. Now, they do have an exception to the foregoing, and they're talking about people who are really, who are bad-intentioned. They're quick to use this chapter as a club over your head. It says, don't let him get away with it. They don't mince any words in this chapter. So Bill wasn't saying be nice to him and give him all lovey-kissy. He says, don't let him get away from it. And if you're positive he's one of this type, you better leave. And is it right to let him ruin your life and the lives of your children? And that's really true. How much does it take? How much are you supposed to take? How much? Now, you have to remember, in these days, women didn't work. They didn't go to college. They didn't have job opportunities. They stayed at home and they raised the family. It was a different world. And so if they left the alcoholic, they were in trouble because there was no welfare. There was no medical assistance. There was nothing. It was really a bad time. So they were kind of, people were stuck together for economic reasons in bad situations. And then it made them feel powerless to change. So when you're reading this, when you put in that perspective, you could see how powerful this is, especially when he has before him a way to stop his drinking and abuse if he really wants to pay the price. So once they're given the opportunity to take the solution, if they're still going to act this way in this behavior, then maybe you better get away from that. That's why we have Al-Anon now, so people don't have to face this alone. The problem with which you struggle usually falls within one of four categories. And it's actually a very good way to look at ourselves or as an alcoholic or the progression of alcoholism. One, your husband may only be a heavy drinker. I don't know what that means anymore. His drinking may be constant or may be heavy only on certain occasion. Perhaps he spends too much money for liquor. It may be slowing him up mentally and physically, but I like this. He does not see it. We never can see what it's doing to us, really. We can't see the truth. Sometimes he is a source of embarrassment to you and his friends. He is positive he can handle his liquor. Anybody feel that way? That it does him no harm. That drinking is unnecessary in his business. Doesn't it sound like Bill W. when he told his wife that he drank because it inspired him the great thoughts? Now, only an alcoholic can think that way. And when we tell people that, we think it makes sense. And they look at us like we're crazy. He would probably be insulted if he were called an alcoholic. Listen, alcoholics like to get insulted. It's their way of life. Insulted if we called him an alcoholic. The world is full of people like him. Some will moderate or stop altogether, and some will not. Of those who keep on, a good number will become true alcoholics after a while. So what is a true alcoholic? True alcoholic has two things in common. They lost the power of choice to drink, and they can't control how much they drink. And we call that real alcoholics now, right? And number two is good. Number two is a little bit worse. Your husband is showing lack of control, for he's unable to stand the water wagon even when he wants to, so he's losing the power of choice. And then he says he often gets entirely out of hand when drinking, which is the control. So alcoholics, we all have an allergy to alcohol, right? We can't take one drink without wanting a second one. Anybody have that in this room? Mm-hmm. Just imagine if we brought a keg in here tonight and we all did that experiment. We'd be fighting over the last drink. No, you don't want to try that. Bert says, no, we're not going to do that.
Nobody would like me.
See, she remembers, right?
Yeah.
So we don't have choice. We don't have control. Now, I like this. He admits this is true. I admit it's true. I have no control how much I drink, and I can't choose not to drink. But here's what kills us. He's positive he's going to do better. And I think he really believes that. He tells himself that at 8 in the morning. And then at noon, he's drunk. And then the next day, we say, I'm positive I can do better. Now, notice it's positive he's going to do better. See, he's going to fix this. And we know he can't fix it, right? And so, but he doesn't realize that. He has a plan. Now, he's begun to try, with or without your cooperation, I like that, various means of moderating or staying dry. And, you know, it talks about that in the more about alcoholism, all the schemes we had and all the things we did, and none of them worked. Maybe he's beginning to lose his friends, so people are starting to get away from him. His business may suffer somewhat. He is worried at times. Any worriers in the room? Worry. Worry was our companion, right? We lived in worry. We swam in it. We didn't even realize we were worrying. I shouldn't talk about you, but for me, worry and anxiety was the water I swam in. We lived that way. I didn't even realize it was always this uneasiness. Anybody else have that? And it says, becoming aware that he cannot drink like other people. So he's beginning to see that. And it says on page 30, it says we have to fully concede to our innermost selves that we're alcoholics, right? The delusion that we can be like other people has to be smashed. Smashed. But he's beginning to see this. He's becoming aware of that. Sometimes drink in the morning and through the day also to hold his nervousness in check. Anybody have that? Anybody nervous in this room? No? I was the only one. Hold himself nervous as a chick. Irritable, restless, and discontented. And if he wasn't nervous, he would tell himself he was, right? So he could drink. He had to have an excuse to drink. He is remorseful after serious drinking bouts and tells you he wants to stop. But when he gets over the spree, here's a great line. He begins to think. That's the killer. He gets over the spree and he begins to think about it. Now, when alcoholics think, nothing good happens. What's more, how he could drink moderately. So you see, he's dying. He can't stop. And he wakes up remorseful and he says, how can I drink moderately? But he knows he can't control how much he drinks. And so he's in this cycle of he can't face the truth. He doesn't want to face the truth because the truth is that he has no power to keep from drinking. And we say this person is in danger. Of course he is. These are the earmarks of a real alcoholic. So if people ask you what a real alcoholic is, you don't hear people say that at the meeting. It says it in the book. You could read this paragraph. So if you had this, you're a real alcoholic. Perhaps he could still tend the business very well. He has by no means ruined everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to stop. And that's what Bill W. used to say. He wanted to stop. Think about that. Now, husband number three, probably there were some twos in the room. Any twos in the room? And some of the twos will become three in a few minutes when we start reading. It says, yeah, we don't have any fours because the fours are in the asylums, but they were probably here Sunday. All right, stop. I'm on a roll tonight. This husband has gone much further than husband number two, but it's just a progression. Though once like number two, he became worse. Remember we read in the big book, he says, we never get better, it always gets worse, right? His friends have slipped away, his home is a near wreck, and he cannot hold a position. Maybe the doctor has been called in, and the weary round of sanitariums and hospitals have begun. Now here's the deal, he admits he cannot drink like other people, but he does not see why. Why can't I? It's unfair. And remember, before Bill W. met Dr. Silkworth, he didn't understand the allergy of the body, right? Bill didn't understand why he couldn't take one drink. He didn't understand it was an allergy. He clings to the notion, I like this, clings to this idea that he will find a way to do so. You know, it says somewhere in the big book that we're desperately hope that we can drink like other people, right? And he may come to the point where he desperately wants to stop but cannot. So now he has the loss of choice. His case presents additional questions which we shall try to answer for you. You can be quite hopeful of a situation like this. And I think there were plenty of people like this in the room. I was somewhere between 4, 3, 2, depending on which day. You know, it was bad. Did anybody identify with these three so far? Powerful the way they describe us. Now, four. If four is the people who they worked with who wrote the book. A husband of whom you completely despair. Remember, they went to the institutions to find the new people. And he has been placed in one institution after another. He is violent or appears definitely insane when drunk. Sometimes he drinks on the way home from the hospital. Perhaps he's had delirium tremens. Doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have him committed. Maybe you've already been obliged to put him away. Now remember, you're reading this, there was no AA. There was no treatment. There was no fellowship. There was no hope for them before this book. It's a sober reminder. Maybe you've already been obliged. This picture may not be as dark as it looks. Many of our husbands were just as far gone, yet they got well. So I don't think there's any, there's hardly any point where the patient's too, person's too far gone. Now they will mention, I think in the next page, some people have really lost their ability to think from alcohol. Their minds have been really damaged. And we don't see that as much anymore. Wet brains, and there was Korsakoff's psychosis. And I don't know why. Maybe they changed the ingredients of booze. I don't know why we don't see it as much. I think people still drink as much. But I saw that when I was in medical school. It was not pretty. Very, very, very bad. Now, Bill W. on page 7 and 8 in his story, you've all heard Bill's story, he was sitting in the room and the doctor was telling Lois that he was going to have to be committed to an asylum, right, or he's going to die of DTs. And there was no hope for him, and they were talking about that. And then he wrote his famous paragraph, how alcohol was his master, he was surrounded by quicksand, he was in morass of self-pity, there was no hope for him. And yet this book is written. And so it says, let's go back to husband number one. Oddly enough, he is often difficult to deal with. He enjoys drinking. It stirs his imagination. His friends feel closer over a highball. Perhaps you enjoy drinking with him yourself when he doesn't go too far. You have passed happy evenings together chatting and drinking before your fire. Perhaps you both like parties which would be dull without liquor. Don't start getting excited. We have enjoyed such evenings ourselves. We had a good time. We know all about liquor as a social lubricant. Well, alcohol was the solution to what? Our perception of reality, how we felt. And I don't know about you, but I was always very shy. It's hard to believe, but I was very shy. And you know those little dances, like you have 15-year-olds and everybody's in a different corner. It was a different world when I was growing up. Yeah, 13. And you know, the guys are over here, the girls over there. And then when I went to Duke and I drank, I would go across the room. I would go across to the other side. Alcohol changed the way I felt. Anybody add that to you? Very powerful. There you go. Some but not all think it has its advantage when reasonably used. Well, here's the problem. That's not possible for me, I wrote. Alcoholics cannot reasonably use alcohol. Now, here's some principles to be applied to alcoholics. They're about, I think they're like 12 or 13 principles on this page. It says the first principle of success is that you should never be angry. Huh. First, never be angry. Well, isn't that true of us? We say we should never be angry. It's the luxury of dubious men. And the dubious luxury of men. I said the same thing last time. I said it wrong. All right, stop. And we talk about how the brainstormer anger is not for us, right? And that we need freedom from anger. It doesn't say we can't get angry, but we shouldn't stay angry. And so that's very hard to follow through. But we have those, for us, we have those prayers I just talked about. And we know that when we're angry, we're blocked from God. And we know that when we're disturbed, there's something wrong with me, right? And so we don't want to be that way. But it's very hard for someone who's living with us to not be angry at us. Even though your husband becomes unbearable and you have to leave him temporarily, you should, if you can go without rancor. Rancor's not good, by the way. It means bitterness and ill feeling and patience and good temper are most necessary. I think that's true for everything, right? So the first principle of success for us in our lives is we should never be angry and we should be patient of good temper. And when we work with others, this is also good if you're sponsoring people. You know, if you're working with another alcoholic, how you should be. And sometimes we need to remember that. Here's our next thought, is that you should never tell him what he must do about his drinking. That's hard to do, too. Maybe, and I guess we shouldn't really tell anybody when we're working with them they should do about his drinking. We should only suggest that he do what we did. And we can only show him the path. If he gets the idea that you are a nag or a killjoy, your chance of accomplishing anything useful may be zero. Now, it's easy for them to get that idea, even if you're having normal conversation with them. And so he says he will use that as an excuse to drink more. Remember, alcoholics drink and they blame other people for their drinking. Anybody in here do that? And an excuse, and he will tell you he's misunderstood. We were the most misunderstood people in the world. And you know, we were most misunderstood in our own minds. We fooled ourselves. Remember, it says that self-pity is an excessive obsession with your own troubles, usually self-caused. That's why the definition. And this may lead to lonely evenings for you, and you may seek someone else to console him, not always another man. What was that? Calm down. They're getting excited if you're listening to this. Be determined that your husband's drinking is not going to spoil your relations with your children or friends. Now, this is really good. We shouldn't let anybody destroy our relations with our children or friends for any reason. These are good spiritual principles to live on. They need your companionship and your help. And here's one. It is possible to have a full and useful life, though your husband continues to drink. Remember, we have to stop depending on other people and depend on God. And we can't depend on other people to make us happy. And we can have a full and spiritual life in spite of other people. Remember, it's only dependent on one thing, our relationship with God. Job or no job, right? Home or no home. We won't get better as long as we quit depending on other people. And so you'd like everybody else to feel good, but you can have a good life in spite of anyone. Now, the problem I have is sometimes I want to make the other person feel better, but then I'll get involved in that, and that's not my job. We want to be kind and loving, but we can't change how other people feel. We could just ask them what we could do to help them. We know women who are unafraid, even unhappy under these conditions. Do not set your heart on reforming your husband. It's another principle. And we shouldn't get set our heart on reforming anybody. And it doesn't always have to be alcoholics. If you're married, don't try to set your heart on changing the other person. Don't try it. Don't even try. Yeah, don't even start. You may be unable to do so no matter how hard you try. And really, we're not in control of how other people are. We have to accept people as they are, remember? We have to practice consideration. We know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow, but you will save many a heartbreak if you can concede and are observing them. So these are things that if you're a wife, you might want to write these out. If you're an alcoholic, you might want to write these out on how you want to be and how you want to be with your spouse. It doesn't have to be just with people who are drinking. We know these suggestions, but you will save many a heartbreak. Your husband may come to appreciate your reasonable impatience. And I think it says in the men's that we're supposed to be reasonable, patient, calm, and understanding. And so I should try to be reasonable and patient in all my affairs, right? And remember, the 12th step, there's a part of the 12th step that we don't talk about a lot. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, we talk about that a lot. We talk about carrying the message to others, but we're supposed to practice the principles in all our affairs. And like we talk about, faith without works is dead. And if we're not practicing the principles in our affairs, then we don't. Our faith isn't going to stay alive. And so, and the principles are all throughout the book. You can call it the 12 steps. There's the principles of the steps. I've given you that handout before. The St. Francis prayer is a good example of the principles to practice in all your affairs. It says, this may lay the groundwork for a friendly talk about his alcohol problem. I don't know how often that happens. Try to have him bring up the subject himself. Be sure you're not critical during such a discussion. That would be true of any discussion you're having with anybody, especially with a spouse. Anybody ever do that? Attempt instead to put yourself in his place. Let him see that you want to be helpful rather than critical. So it says somewhere in the book, we're always to be helpful in all our interactions. When a discussion does arise, you may suggest he read this book, or at least a chapter on alcoholism. Now remember, it's suggested in working with others that you have them read the book. And they're suggesting read the book. So they felt this book is really important. And I know there are a lot of people, how people sponsor and this and that. But, you know, I believe that the book was written for a reason. I think you should read the book with whoever you're working with. And I find the more I read it, the more I do it. And at least a chapter on alcoholism, which we're going to talk about Saturday, which is on the how the alcoholic has no defense except from God. And that his mind will tell him it's okay to drink right before he drinks, and that there's no power that the wife or anybody else has to stop it when it gets into his mind. You think he ought to know the subject better, as everyone should have a clear understanding of the risk he takes if he drinks too much. But understanding that, remember, if you're an alcoholic, self-knowledge won't help you, and fear won't help you. Show him, and I don't know about this paragraph, show him you have confidence in his power to stop or moderate, so you don't want to be a wet blanket, that you only want him to take care of his health. Thus, you may be succeed in interesting him in alcoholism. So maybe you're by showing him compassion and some understanding, he'll want to read more. But it really depends how much he's defeated, and I think they talk about that in the next few paragraphs. He probably has several alcoholics among his own acquaintances. You might suggest that you both take an interest in them. Drinkers like to help other drinkers. It says, if this kind of approach does not catch your husband's interest, it may be best to drop the subject. But after a friendly talk, your husband may usually revive the topic himself. This may take patient waiting, but it will be worth it. Meanwhile, you might try to help the wife of another serious drinker. If you act upon these principles, your husband may stop or moderate. So the more you're spiritually fit, the less they'll have an excuse to drink because of you. They can't blame it on you anymore, although alcoholics can blame it on others, even when it's not reasonable. Suppose, however, that your husband fits the description number two. The same principles will apply to husband number one should be practiced. Now, what we just read is for the guy who is not a real alcoholic yet, and he may not become an alcoholic, but his drinking's becoming a problem. But now we're talking about husband number two. The same principles which apply to husband number one should be practiced. But after his next binge, ask him if he would really like to get over drinking for good. Remember, that's what they asked. Are you done for good? Now, somebody mentioned in the meeting that you're supposed to ask, can you stay sober for 24 hours? And that may be good. But what they wanted to know, were you done in your mind? Were you completely defeated? Were you done for good? And it says, do not ask that he do it for you or anyone else, just what he liked to. And that's what Dr. Bob would ask the new guy, are you done for good? The chances are he would. Show him a copy of the book and tell him what you have found out about alcoholism. Remember, we're supposed to tell the new person our experience as alcoholics, and we're supposed to tell him what it was like for us. Remember, we can gain the confidence where nobody else can. And so that's where we, our past and our experience can save the life of someone else. We're only supposed to talk about ourselves, not how they should be. It says, show them as alcoholics, the writers of the book understand. Tell them some of the interesting stories you read. If you think he will be shy of a spiritual remedy, ask him to look at the chapter on alcoholism. Now, why do they say that? Well, there's some people don't want to hear about God, right? And this and that. But you have to convince them that without God, they're in trouble. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't tell you what God is or whether you should find God. We just tell you that you need God. And so if you need God, then we have a way to find him. Does this make sense? Did I upset him? I don't know. All right. And so, and remember the last paragraph on page 43 says, once again, the alcoholic, we might turn to that. It's a powerful chapter. They have it right before we agnostics, so that you'll want to read this and then you'll want to find out about God. It says once more, page 43, the last paragraph. It's one you should probably memorize. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. It must come from a higher power. Well, guess what the next chapter is called? We agnostics. It's all about God. And really, by the time you get to page 43 with somebody, if they're not convinced of that, they're not going to do the rest. And I can't convince anybody of that, but from their experience, and they gave us experience, and we described the alcoholic, if that applies to them, then they're going to realize that deep in their heart. And that's how they'll take the first step. Then perhaps we, on page, going back to the hand, to 113, then perhaps we'll be interested enough to continue. Is he defeated? Is he desperate? I'll just read a few more lines, we'll open up. Is he enthusiastic? Your cooperation will mean a great deal. If he is lukewarm or thinks he's not an alcoholic, we suggest you leave him alone. They suggest that in the big book. Go on to someone else. But don't ever close the door between you and helping the other person. Avoid urging him to follow a program. The seed has been planted in his mind. I remember I went to somebody at their house. I gave him a big book. We talked for an hour and a half. He wasn't ready. 3 years later, he called me. Took him to Valley Hope. He's sober today. You never know. You never know. He knows that thousands of men like himself have recovered, but don't remind him of this after he's been drinking, for he may be angry. Yeah, it's probably not a good time. Sooner or later, you're likely to find him reading the book once more. Wait until repeated stumbling convinces him he must act, you see. We can't make somebody desperate, for the more you hurry him, the longer his recovery may be delayed. I'm going to stop it here, and so we'll pick up number next time if you have number three husband. So I hope this was